It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees. It's been 39 degrees all day long. A light rain is drifting through a foggy mist, actually being driven by southeast winds, steady at 23 and gusting to 33 miles per hour at the airport, where they are also reporting 1.5 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak City Council has approved a land lease agreement for the construction of their new fire station. And the City Council has adopted its capital improvement projects priority list. No surprise, St. Herman Harbor replacement is at the top. And Senator Lisa Murkowski has introduced a bill to support coastal communities like Kodiak. Those stories, plus a bill aimed at increasing oil and gas production in Cook Inlet, took a step forward on Monday.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. U.S. stocks are regaining some ground after the Dow tumbled more than 700 points in afternoon trading. This following a report showing hotter-than-expected inflation last month. NPR's Scott Horsley says that could affect the timing of the Federal Reserve's next move on interest rates.
The cost of living index from the Labor Department came in slightly hotter than forecasters had expected. Rising rents and food prices were only partially offset by falling gasoline prices. Stripping out volatile food and energy prices, the so-called core inflation rate in January was 3.9%, the same as the month before. The Federal Reserve has said it wants to see more evidence that inflation is heading down towards its target of 2% before the central bank starts cutting interest rates. The Fed's been paying special attention to the price of services such as health care and car repair, which were up last month. That's in contrast to the price of goods like used cars, which were sharply lower. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow's closed down 524 points. President Biden is calling on the House of Representatives to take a bipartisan legislation passed by the Senate that includes military assistance to Ukraine and Israel. NPR's Tamara Keith reports Biden used remarks today to hit former President Donald Trump for saying that if NATO allies did not spend enough on their own defense, he'd tell Russia to do whatever it wants.
Biden described Trump's weekend rally rant about NATO as dumb, shameful, dangerous, and un-American. He said history is watching and told House Republicans who have indicated they plan to block the Senate bill that they need to think hard about whose side they are on.
You got to decide. Are you going to stand up for freedom? Or are you going to side with terror and tyranny? You're going to stand with Ukraine, you're going to stand with Putin. We stand with America or Trump.
Speaker Mike Johnson has said the House won't take its cues from the Senate. Tamara Keith, NPR News, the White House.
Snow is beginning to taper off in many parts of the northeastern U.S. after leaving a foot of snow in some places. NPR's Tovia Smith reports parts of New York and New Jersey saw their biggest snowfall totals in a couple of years.
The snow was intense, but the storm was fast-moving, sparing many locations what could have been much worse. Temperatures in the coming days hovering above freezing will also mean the snow will melt relatively soon, but National Weather Service meteorologist Nelson Vaz says the short-term hazard will be black ice.
Tonight, temperatures are going to go back below freezing, so that's going to cause any wet surfaces, slush, and water to refreeze. And that's always the tricky part, is you're not able to see the black ice until it's too late.
The snow was enough to cancel some 1,500 flights and to make for a picturesque walk through Central Park in New York City. But in the Boston area, the storm was a bust, leaving most areas with just a few inches. Tovia Smith, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak City Council approved a land lease agreement on Mill Bay Road for the City of Kodiak's new fire station construction. The roughly two-year lease will cost the city $2,000 per month starting in April and extending through June of 2026. It's the latest development in the ongoing project to replace the deteriorating fire station. The current building is 80 years old, and sections of sheetrock have fallen out along with persistent water damage. The structural integrity of the building also continues to be at risk after the 7.9 magnitude earthquake that hit Alaska in 2018. But there's an unusual pizza clause within the land lease that requires the property's owner, Kevin Arndt, to provide two extra-large pizzas from his business Pizza Pit to the Kodiak Fire Department every month. Councilmember Annika Woods says while this type of clause is uncommon, it will have an impact on local firefighters.
I think that's a very clever and unique way to boost morale for the fire department while they're going through pretty big change,
yeah.
Especially considering they have the unique situation of living in their work environment.
The pizzas will be free and won't cost the fire department anything other than a tip to the delivery driver. Based on discussions during the previous city council meeting, construction on the new fire station is expected to begin early this spring. Kodiak's city council adopted its fiscal year 2025 capital improvement projects priority list for the state and federal governments last week. The St. Herman Harbor replacement is still the top priority, although some of the underlying details and numbers have been updated during recent council meetings. The final list includes five separate projects, which City Manager Mike Tvenge listed out during last week's city council meeting.
Number one on our list this year is the St. Herman Harbor infrastructure replacement at $11,500,000. Our wastewater treatment plant, $1,900,000. Our new fire department emergency response vehicle for $2,350,000. That's our ladder truck.
The city is also asking for nearly $1 million for repairs at the Kodiak History Museum, which is the state's oldest building, and almost $4 million for improvements to Mission and Mill Bay roads. The city's wish list overlaps with the Kodiak Island Borough's list as well. Both prioritize the St. Herman Harbor project, upgrading the wastewater treatment plant facility, and road repairs. The city's funding requests to both the state and federal governments have the same five projects listed in the same order of priority. In addition to the capital improvements projects, the state list includes separate requests for an inflation-proof increase to the base student allocation, or BSA, and an increase to state funding for community jails. Councilmember John Whidden expressed concern that he wouldn't know how to explain and advocate for a somewhat ambiguous state-supported project listed as food security.
I couldn't tell anybody specifically what we're talking about, an infrastructure address food security. And I'm about to vote on this, so I wonder if, when this gets to Juneau, if anybody else would know what we're talking about.
City Manager Tvenge said the language would be clarified so that legislators in Juneau would have a better idea of what the council is requesting. The city council will not only look to the Alaska legislature, but also for potential state loans or federal grants as funding sources for their latest capital improvement projects. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill on Monday to support coastal communities. The legislation, called the Working Waterfronts Act, would establish grants for marine infrastructure and mariculture, resources for fishermen to convert boats to hybrid or electric engines, and improve research on ocean acidification, among other things. Murkowski's office said in a press release the bill aims to improve food security, shoreside infrastructure, and even support federal conservation research projects. Several fishing industry groups and organizations voiced support for the bill. Bruce Schachtler, the director of the National Seafood Marketing Coalition, thanked the senator in a statement, saying, quote, "The provisions in the act will help the industry compete in a global market that has long ago passed us by, with their subsidies that address labor, financing, technology, and marketing." The senator said in the release that she has been in contact with several ocean-based industry experts. Murkowski also asked for public feedback on what to include in the bill back in 2022. The legislation has been referred to the Senate Committee on Finance, but it is unknown if it will take up the bill. A bill aimed at increasing oil and gas production in Cook Inlet took a step forward on Monday. The proposal advancing out of the House Resources Committee would provide companies and researchers free access to seismic survey data used to locate oil and gas deposits in Cook Inlet, as reported by Alaska Public Media. Gas companies have warned that current production levels in Cook Inlet are too low to meet demand, threatening to drive up prices. Representative Tom McKay, an Anchorage Republican who chairs the committee, says he believes the proposal could spur more drilling.
By making seismic data more accessible, we hope to stimulate interest and investment from new players in the Cook Inlet energy sector.
Seismic surveys are often proprietary, but in Alaska, to be eligible for certain tax credits, companies are required to turn the data over to the state. The state keeps it confidential for 10 years, then charges other prospective drillers to access it. Representative Donna Mears, an Anchorage Democrat, was the only member of the Resources Committee to vote against the bill. She says she's not convinced it'll have much impact.
I think we should be considering bills and policies that actually move the needle. There's not a barrier to the cost for getting this data from the department. The barrier that I've heard from the industry is the timeliness of the release of that information.
Mears says the department has been slow to release seismic data even after the 10-year confidentiality period expires. She says lawmakers should focus on making sure the Department of Natural Resources has enough staff to release its data in a timely manner. Department officials told the committee they'd recently improved their workflow and were releasing data regularly. Roofing businesses in Anchorage have been slammed with snow removal work this winter as a growing number of roofs, at least 10 so far, have failed under heavy loads. Anchorage building officials have identified some common roof characteristics and have been getting the word out about which properties should be inspected and potentially closed if the snow isn't removed. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea has more.
Chad Hansen just used a big forklift to deliver three snowblowers to this flat roof in a midtown office park. There's about 3 feet of snow up here, literally tons.
Oh, this is just fun, isn't it? Did that one last night, now this one today.
Hansen owns General Roofing Company in Anchorage. The company's been busy with snow removal since November, and the crew today is down a few guys. Hansen says they've been getting worn out.
Hey, you want to hang out, man? There's a snow scoop right there, man. Jump right on in.
No,
$30 an hour, I'll get you up here.
$30 an hour, maybe. Get a side gig, maybe.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of it to go around right now, you know?
Yeah.
We can see across Tudor Road where a different crew is clearing snow off the top of another office building. Anchorage has gotten more than 100 inches of snow this season, setting various records in November, December, and January. A fresh series of roof collapses from the snow load this winter has prompted city building officials to take a more active role in identifying and managing the risk. Daniel King is an engineer in the city's development services division, and a quick disclosure, he's married to an Alaska Public Media staff member. He's been working on the city's roof guidance, which is not his typical work. As best he knows,
last winter and this winter are the first times that we've had this level of failure occur in our buildings. And so it's an evolving situation where we're trying to move as quickly as the situation is growing, as the danger grows.
Commercial building roofs supported with a specific type of wooden truss have been failing. But the city doesn't know exactly which buildings have them. However, using public property data and some knowledge about how building codes have changed over time, King's division was able to identify about 1,200 older commercial properties across the city with roofs that might be built like the ones that have failed.
That does not mean that 1,200 have this type of truss, because it could be a different type of construction that is wood. It could be something else. And so we are asking people to respond and let us know, do you have this type of truss, or do you have a different type of construction that hasn't seen the same pattern of failure?
In the past few weeks, his division sent the owners of these properties warning letters with this information, how to identify their trusses, plus advice on inspections and snow removal.
We're mostly concerned with the warehouses and larger, longer spans of buildings.
King says they recently mailed out another 6,000 notices to tenants of previously notified property owners. They published an interactive map on Thursday with a little bit of information about roofs that have failed, properties that might have the trusses of concern, and properties they've confirmed do have them. The map, which is being updated daily, shows 19 roof failures since last winter, which was also unusually snowy. The city is asking snow removal contractors to prioritize the higher-risk buildings. The general roofing crew is on one of those potentially riskier buildings. With the snowblowers running, they start making short work on the snow load. Until they realize there are little vents protruding up buried in the snow.
Be easy when you're shoveling in here, too, because you bust those a few feet. There's
a line of them all. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
After being postponed for a month because of a thaw-up in January, 15 mushers ran a snowy Bogus Creek 150 sled dog race over the weekend. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, in the end, the defending champion raced his way to victory.
Cueflik's Raymond Alexi successfully defended his title in the 2024 Bogus Creek 150 sled dog race, beating out 14 other teams to win the race in just over 18 hours.
I'm tired and sore. I'm mainly kicking and skate pulling and running from coming back when I got to the Cusco.
Alexi arrived at the finish line shortly after sunrise on Sunday, February 11th.
That it was smoother than coming back. Coming back was a challenge because of headwind and snow, wet snow, and got really slow.
It's his third win of the regional racing season this winter. Alexi has won every race he's entered since 2022, except this year's Kuskokwim 300, which he didn't finish. Throughout the first half of the race, Alexi worked his way up the field and arrived at the Bogus Creek checkpoint in the lead, just 1 minute ahead of rookie Darren George, who was hot on Alexi's tail. Alexi grew that narrow lead throughout the second half of the race and said he was focused on the race and wasn't aware of anyone behind him.
I just took off from the checkpoint and left.
Yeah.
Whoever was behind me, Darren.
Ultimately, Alexi finished around 5 miles ahead of the second-place competitor, Bethel musher Pete Kaiser. Kaiser, a former Iditarod champion and multi-time winner of the Kuskokwim 300, said for him, the 2024 Bogus Creek 150 was a smooth and relatively uneventful race.
Actually, a lot of the race didn't really even feel like a race because I was kind of by myself for a lot of it. So, it was good. I was hoping for a little snow to slow things down a bit, and we got it.
But Kaiser said conditions weren't steady.
It snowed on us a few times, a couple pretty heavy snow squalls and some wind at the end, and so a little bit of everything.
Kaiser is a little over 2 weeks out from the Iditarod and told KYUK before this year's Bogus Creek 150 he would be running the race with a lot of flexibility and would try and keep the pace easy, keeping in mind his dogs have a much longer, slower race right on the horizon. The Bogus Creek 150's Rookie of the Year, 48-year-old Darren George of Akiachuk, came in third place. The 15-team field was a fairly even split between former champions and racers new to the Bogus 150. The six former winners competing include defending champ Raymond Alexi, as well as Kaiser, 2021 winner Richie Deal, and 2019 winner Jason Pavla. Conversely, almost half of the 15 teams had never run the race before. While Raymond Alexi stretched his lead throughout the second half of the Bogus 150, the race behind the winner was less set. Pete Kaiser steadily gained through the second half, passing Aaron Alexi, who came in fifth, and Rookie of the Year Darren George, who came in third. The other Kaiser Racing Kennels team, run by Richie Deal, also steadily picked off teams throughout the early morning to secure fourth place. This year's Bogus Creek 150 was overall a slower race than last year. Winner Alexi finished just over 2 hours slower than his winning time last year. He takes home at least $12,000 from a $75,000 total race purse, one of the largest race purses in the sport after the Iditarod and Kuskokwim 300. His Bogus Creek 150 win also brings Alexi closer to another win in the Kuskokwim 300's Delta Championship Series, which he swept in its inaugural year last year. The next in the five-race series is the February 50 doubles, scheduled for February 24th. With reporting from Evan Erickson and Charlie, in Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
Human interactions with moose have been becoming more common in the Anchorage Bowl, as deep snow pushes them out of the woods and into places where it's easier to find food, and also where there are more people. Like the Costco in East Anchorage this Saturday. KNBA's Rhonda McBride witnessed that close encounter.
This story comes with a warning. Although what you are about to hear is a lighthearted take on a familiar story in Anchorage, it is a good idea to never feed a moose, get too close, or lose sight of the fact that they can be dangerous. But that said, when there's a moose on the loose in a Costco parking lot, it can make life pretty interesting.
Morris the Misfit Munching Moose, his tummy's empty and his brains are loose.
Morris the Misfit Munching Moose and his hungry habits have been immortalized in song. Just before the store opened at 10 on Saturday, it looked like Morris was up to his old tricks, and like the rest of the shoppers, out to find a Super Bowl smorgasbord.
Then he took to a life of crime.
Morris thought he found a good target when he caught sight of Amber Rotar's Costco cart, just as she loaded groceries into the back of her car. Rotar later posted the video of the encounter on Facebook.
Scooch! I'll give you the sweet potatoes.
Luckily, the moose gave up on trying to steal her potatoes out from under a bag of brown rice.
No ears back, buddy. Just scooch.
Every Saturday, Rotar buys a lot of produce for her meal prep business. She says the moose found plenty to check out in her cart and showed much interest in the bell peppers. When she realized there was nothing she could do but wait for the moose to sniff and be done, she grabbed a few seconds of video on her cell phone. People asked her, why didn't she take more?
Because I was like, I should probably not pay attention to my phone while I'm 6 feet away from a wild animal that's larger than I am.
Only a shopping cart separated Rotar and the moose, but he eventually got interested in a nearby tree, and she made her getaway. Throughout the day, the moose refused to leave the parking lot. As one Costco worker put it, he was out to browse the store's entire outdoor produce section. And at one point, Morris took a nap near the tire center, but by late afternoon, Costco staffers were back to moose wrangling, including the store manager, Alan Arnold.
Not generally part of my job description, but, you know, you got to adapt and overcome. He was quite friendly, so, but just trying to keep people away so nobody got hurt.
Alaska folk singer Mike Campbell claims his song was inspired by a true story about the time he came around the corner on the Glen Highway and spotted a moose with a Burger King bag in its mouth. So he says,
he don't like me, he's Morris, the misfit munching moose.
In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
The latest survey of consumer prices shows that inflation continues to shrink. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. The Commerce Department says prices last month were 3.1% higher than a year earlier. That was a bit more than economists expected, but less than in December. Federal Reserve officials say they want to see inflation come down more before cutting interest rates. The Treasury Department wants investment advisors to help fight money laundering. It's proposing a rule that would compel advisors to inform the government of suspicious activity. Last week, the agency proposed a similar rule for real estate professionals. Coca-Cola reported better than expected revenue, up 7% in the final 3 months of last year. The improvement came from foreign markets and offset lower demand in the U.S. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 13th day of February, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:45. It will set again at 6:03, giving us 9 hours and 18 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 47 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees, set in 1931, and our record low was 6 degrees, set in 1921. Currently 39 degrees still. A light rain is falling, driven by southeast winds at 23 miles per hour, gusting to 33. At the airport, they also continue to show 1.5 miles of visibility. Look for rain this afternoon and this evening, at least until 1 a.m. High near 43 today, overnight low around 35. And these southeast winds are expected to continue overnight, 35 gusting to 50 today, and 30 gusting to 35 tonight, turning to the east tomorrow to 25, gusting as high as 35 tomorrow. They are starting to call for partly sunny skies at some point tomorrow. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 4:22 p.m. here on the east side and be 8.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:26 p.m. of -0.3. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:53 p.m. and be 14.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:04 of -0.3. Mariners, be aware, we do have a gale warning through tonight from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Southeast winds to 40 knots for today and tonight, seas to 22 feet. For tomorrow, east 30, seas to 20 feet. And for tomorrow night, east 35, seas to 18 feet. Thursday through Friday, east 40, seas to 23 feet. And on Saturday, east 25, seas to 18 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Wednesday. Southeast winds to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet today, becoming east 25 tonight, seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, east 30, seas back up to 9 feet. And for Wednesday night in the Shelikof, east winds to 35 knots, seas to 10 feet. Thursday, look for east 45, seas to 11 feet. Not much nicer on Friday with northeast winds to 40, seas to 10 feet. And on Saturday in the Shelikof, northeast 25, seas coming down to 6 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak Bay, gale warning through tonight. Southeast winds to 40 knots, becoming southeast 35 tonight. 16-foot seas for today and tonight in Chiniak Bay. For tomorrow, southeast 25, seas at 10 feet. And for Wednesday night, southeast 30, seas to 12 feet. For Thursday in Chiniak Bay, look for east winds to 35 knots and seas to 16 feet. Well, be sure to tune in to today's Talk of the Rock. It's a rebroadcast from August 2022. KMXT's former reporter, Dylan Simard, will be sitting down with local experts to talk about the opioid crisis in Kodiak. Talk of the Rock will be back with a live episode next week with host Jared Griffin speaking with Jill Wallace, Tia Falcone, and James Price about a four-part community workshop on action on addiction and recovery coming up in March. Senior citizens of Kodiak is once again in need of paper bags. Please make sure they are not torn or soiled. They can be dropped off at the senior center between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Thank you. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education work session on Thursday. That's beginning at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting agenda and packet for the meeting can be viewed on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look on Board Docs. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, February 15th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Please contact the Borough Clerk's Office with any questions at 907-486-9310. And the Kodiak City Council will be having a work session on Thursday, and that will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. Things happening at the Kodiak Public Library include Wednesday's Lego Club. That happens at 3:30 p.m. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. If you're over 10, just bring yourself. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time for children ages 3 to 6. And Thursdays at 3 p.m. is the next chess club gathering. So chess people, 3 p.m. on Thursdays. Lapsit story time for babies up to 3 years old is 10:30 a.m. on Fridays. And rather relatively new, the library's video game club will be meeting at 3:30 p.m. on Friday. That's for ages 13 and older, the library's new video game club, 3:30 p.m. on Friday. Pokemon Club will be meeting Saturday. That happens at 1 p.m. Please bring your own card sets. Alternative crafts will be provided for younger children. That's for grades 1 through 8. Pokemon Club, 1 p.m. on Saturday. And the escape room is open. Sessions are Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m., Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Saturdays at 11 a.m. Patrons under 14 must be with an adult, and it's for groups of 4 or less. Call or stop by the library to sign up. And join in February's Genre Reading Challenge. Explore different genres and record your progress on kodiak.beanstack.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.